This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor speaking to Jim Robbins, the New York Times correspondent, but also the author of The Man Who Planted Trees, a story of lost groves, the science of trees, and a plan. This book is 10 years new, because over these last 10 years since I first spoke to Jim about his book, there's been a lot of attention to the ecosystem of the planet, sometimes called global warming, but in any event, we can all see it changing profoundly in some fashion. And at the same time, we account for what it's doing to our lives, to commerce, to trade, but are we looking at what it's doing to what we take for granted, the trees around us? Jim, the story I remember vividly many years ago, and I don't know whether it's accurate or not, it was a wonderful anecdote, is that when the ships first came to America, I'm thinking probably the 16th, 17th century, early on, that the forest on the East Coast was so vast that you could pick it up, smell it 150 miles at sea. I don't know if it's true or not, but you tell a story about how a squirrel could go from, what about the Kittery, to Florida with never touching the ground. Where did those trees go? What happened to them? Where are they today, Jim?
Yeah, the squirrel traveled from the East Coast all the way to the Mississippi River without touching the ground. Those trees became, those forests became houses, those forests became ships. They became farm fields. They were, you know, uprooted and cleared. And God knows how many, what size these trees were when they were cut down, and probably a lot bigger than the trees out there today. Of course, I don't remember the year, but there was a chestnut blight that came from Asia and killed millions of chestnut trees all the way from the north down to the south. And so there's been a lot of that have taken out the forest, a lot of reforestation, but still a lot of areas that have been deforested. And maybe one of the reasons there are floods on the Mississippi and other places, because there are no trees to take up the water when it rains or when it snows. And so flooding gets worse than it would have been. Also, change to the climate. One of the key aspects of the Amazon is the role in the bioclimate. There is a climate that's modified by forests, and in turn, the climate modifies the forest. Nobody really knows how it works completely, but they do know that the Amazon, which is a forest about the size of the United States, influences rain and drought and other things in Texas and California. So this is one of the themes of my reporting, whether it's on birds in the bird book or trees, is how little we know about the world that we live in. And it's huge. I mean, if you start to look at the things we don't know, it's just mind-boggling. And here we are destroying it in many ways before we really know what it is and how these things work. And I think it's dangerous. And I hope to call attention to that. And at the same time, restore a sense of wonder to this world so that we don't take it for granted and we come to appreciate it.
You mentioned unknowns. That's a big and fascinating chapter in your book. I go to, it's not only we cut down the trees and lost their joy and converted them into the bounty of early America, the prosperity launched from the forest, but also you introduce me to the world of aerosols. Some of them are called phytoncides. There are glandular trichomes. Forgive the pronunciation. What is the science of what is being discovered about what the trees do to defend themselves, to protect the area around them, their own ecosystem, and what we get from it? What do we know now, Jim?
Well, we don't know much more than we did. It's one area that is not well studied. But we do know things about the substances that these trees aerosolize. We do know, for example, willow trees aerosolize I forget the chemical name of it, but it's essentially the basic ingredient of aspirin. And so there's a belief, not well studied, but there's speculation, informed speculation, that willows all over the world that line waterways take up water and clean it, essentially, with this aspirin acetylsalicylic acid is the acid that became aspirin, was discovered to be a pain reliever. But it also is a chemo preventative. It's a cancer preventative. It's also an antibiotic and does other things. And so these willows are a natural chemical factory along our streams and rivers that clean the water and keep it healthy for the creatures in the water and the creatures that drink it. So there's a lot of there's a chemical ecology in our world, and trees are a big part of that chemical ecosystem. And they do a lot of different things, and aerosols are apparently one of them. Now, I just wrote a story about ozone pollution, and one of the things that heat and ozone might be doing to these trees is diminishing the abilities of insects and the trees to accomplish the pollination that takes place between them, because it's diminishing their abilities, and so there's less pollination going on in places where it's hot and where there's air pollution.
In anticipation of our conversation, Jim, I marched around my little piece of Connecticut here to take pictures of the trees and to identify the mix, ash and walnut and maple and eastern cottonwoods. But it occurred to me as I was marching around that they were telling each other, it's okay, he's all right, let him go. Because you identify the possibility that the trees signal each other, what, at threat? Or at weather changes, and how do they signal each other? What is the imagined ability to communicate between trees?
It's there's a field of plant signaling, and it's widely thought to be a chemical process. I mean, it is a chemical process. I know that there are sagebrush, which are a tree that chemically signal other sagebrush when there's an attack by grasshoppers. And that allows the other sagebrush trees to prepare their defenses. So a sagebrush on one end of a meadow might get under, be assaulted by grasshoppers, and then it releases methyl jasminate, and it wafts through the air to other plants, and then they can prepare defense against grasshoppers. So that's one of the things they do. There's a book out by a woman named Suzanne Simard. She's a scientist in British Columbia, about how there are mother trees and daughter trees, and they communicate through the root system, including mycorrhizae, which is a kind of fungus, and they send signals and shuffle resources amongst themselves. And there's a scientist I read in the Times in the style section a few years ago who believes she's Italian. She can understand what plants are saying. She's a kind of an intuitive thing. So there's lots of things to speculate about. Some of it's informed speculation. Some of it's kind of more out there. But I'll entertain anything if it's interesting and can, you know, help us better understand the world that we're in.
I'm speaking to Jim Robbins, the New York Times correspondent, but the author, most importantly right now, of The Man of Plan to Save the Planet. We're going to ecosystems, large ones, river valleys. I live in one, the Housatonic River Valley. Jim identifies the Chesapeake River Valley, and we'll also go to Japan because there's something to learn about trees and the ocean. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.